We bring in Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Good, Marty. What's going on?
Well, it's quite a night last night, and I always like to start off our segment because people love to hear your take on the Warriors, and one eye on the Warriors, one eye on the baseball game.
Yeah, great night. Had to go with the Warriors and then catch up with the Giants on tapes. It made for a great doubleheader, I'll tell you. But that was one of the greatest Warriors wins of ever. The entire history of the franchise. They're going to be down for the count, it looks like, if they can't win that game. They're on the road. Stephen Curry was unbelievable. Steve Kerr made some really gutty decisions, benching Draymond Green a lot of the fourth quarter, taking him out when they had the ball, yanking him back in when they didn't. And it was just really an epic night for them. The satisfaction level, with their, as they say, championship DNA coming to the fore was just off the charts. And I think it really puts them in a position to hold serve at home and win the title.
Boy, exciting. Exciting stuff. Then with the other eye, we're watching the Giant-Dodger game. And here's Jacob Junis, Bruce. This guy has gone into the sixth inning, and he faces one batter, and that's the end of his hamstring. But this has been the most dependable pitcher they've had.
Yeah, he found his slider early on. It looks like he didn't have it, but all of a sudden it came to him. He threw a great one down and in to strike out Freddie Freeman in, I think, the third inning. And he got Trey Turner on one. And he's been so good, and it's a shame. The hamstring is a funny thing. Maybe it's not a big deal, or maybe it's something that's going to be bothering him off and on. And, with Cobb and DeSclafani out, it's not what they want to hear. But everybody's got their problems. The Dodgers might be without Walker Buehler for, who knows, a long time. Every time you hear elbow tightness or forearm tightness, it's not good. He's already had Tommy John surgery. Walker Buehler had it way back in, 2015. So he knows the deal, but they might be losing him, and the Giants have their problems in the rotation. But why not Kershaw and Sam Long? Perfect.
Yeah, great matchup today, the two lefties, and tomorrow Urias and Rodon. So
that's a great one.
It's a good weekend of baseball. Let's face it; it's a lot of fun. Tony La Russa was in the news this week, and I was looking forward to talking to you about this. Tony is old school. I'm not sure what he is, but he's got Trey Turner up there in a 1-2 count, and Freddie Freeman's on first, and there's a wild pitch, and Freddie Freeman ends up on second. Now it's 1-2 on Trey Turner, and he decides to walk him intentionally. To bring up Max Muncy, and of course, what was going to happen. Muncy hits a three-run homer, and Tony is just skewered by everybody. What did you think of that?
Well, I think Freddie Freeman's expression said it all. They showed him on the bases going, he couldn't quite believe this was happening, that they were going to walk Trey Turner with a 1-2 count. I don't care what the analytics say. You don't do that ever. If it's 2-1, or many of miss badly, 3-1. You go, well, we don't want to mess around with this guy. We got to put him on. But 1-2, and Tony keeps. Of course, Tony's the smartest guy in the history of baseball, so you have to remember that. And he's way smarter than all of us. And you don't understand what goes into this. It's very complicated. The numbers show. what? I don't care what his numbers are with two strikes against the lefty. La Russa told his lefty that he doesn't have a strikeout pitch on Turner here. That's what he told him. You can't strike him out, so we're just going to put him on. Forget the 1-2. What does that do for the pitcher? Let alone the analytic sheets.
No, I'm with you. He had all these ratios and this and that.
Yeah, he had some algorithms in there. Don't forget that.
Yeah, you can go 1-2 on a lefty in the middle of June, and in the afternoon game, you could just break it down. So Tony's taking a lot of heat for this. I wonder if he's going to last the season. Now, I know Reinsdorf loves him, and he owns the ball club, and that's why Tony's there. But this is an underachieving White Sox team. And last year, they won their 93 games and got knocked out quickly in the playoffs by Houston. I wonder if Tony lasts the season, Bruce.
You do have to wonder about that. I mean, he lost everybody with that move. It's so difficult to defend especially, you know, people who have played and lived the game and know you've got to look at the moment, you know, and not the sheet of paper sometimes. But, you know, they're below 500. They're only five games behind the Twins, but, you know, the Twins look like they're taking off. I mean, Buxton's hitting two homers a game now, and Correa's back, and they're having a lot of fun. The Guardians, the team we've loved through the years, they're in the mix too. But I think, you know, it's going to be tough for the White Sox to catch Minnesota unless they kind of right the ship. I think, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to Tim Anderson, who's like a big-time leader on that club. You know, they need to have Robert healthy all the time. But, you know, with Andrew Vaughn and Grandal, they've got an awful lot of talent. They've got a good closer. They've got a lot. Could Tony screw it up? I don't know. I mean, if he loses the team, you know, if he loses the players' belief in him, that could be a big factor.
Yeah, he went through this with the Cardinals a little bit at the end of his tenure.
You know, role players always play a fight.
Not Wade Junior.
You have newer words.
8328.
Are in the news.
Hello, everybody.
This Rob Thompson. He takes over for Joe Girardi. Somebody on the team hits two homers a game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden, he's won eight in a row. Rob Thompson, if he walked in the room, I wouldn't know him, to tell you the truth. And they're now 29-29, and they're back in this whole race.
Yeah, I think Dell Ennis and Dave Philly hit back-to-back homers last night.
Really?
Yeah, it's just, I tell you, there's no better lefty power combo than Schwarber and Harper. You know, they got the Stanton and Judge from the right side, whoever you want. But for lefties, I tell you, those two
strikeouts.
They just electrify the stadium at home.
Quite a night last night.
The Phillies are just mashing the ball.
Talking
All right, beautiful day for baseball. Game two between
the... It's hilarious, really.
It's a pleasure to bring in
Girardi. I mean, they could not win a game. They finally... we couldn't win a game. We got to get rid of him. We can't win a game. Now they can't lose a game.
Amazing.
And, yeah, it is. It's such a great baseball thing. You can analyze it all you want. But I tell you, you know, the bottom line is they do have a heck of a lineup.
Has its challenges.
Talking baseball.
And we'll get out of it together to learn
more.
Where
are they? They're still nine games.
And 6-8.
Yeah, but they're only
104-5.
The sports spot.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
My next point to you is that all of a sudden, and this is why we love baseball, we have a pennant race. We have a race. And this wild card that we've been conceding 4, 5, and 6 to, you know, the Cardinals, Brewers, Giants, and, you know, maybe the Braves. The Padres. We've been conceding that. All of a sudden, the Braves are in it, the Phillies are in it, and the Cardinals have overtaken Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee's lost 7 in a row. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, they're out of first place now.
Yeah, so you're right. It's going to be great. And, I mean, just all the things we've been talking about, the Angels losing streak, the Phillies turning around, the Brewers kind of going in the tank. It's looking like it's going to be that kind of season. Now, there's no way we could actually predict what's going to happen, but it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. See,
yeah.
We ended up analytically getting involved with, you know, well, this team is, you know, 7 back or 8 back, and no team has come back from that distance. No, when you play a game of 162 and you have 105 games to go, anything can happen. And this is right. This is the way baseball should be. So the Giants are in a race here, and we'll touch on Atlanta here too. They've won 9 straight. And Brian Snitker sat him down and said, look, you guys are world champions. Just relax and go out and play. And he's got a pitching staff now that gets it done, and Acuna's on fire. And all of a sudden, the Braves have won 9 straight.
I'd love to see the Mets, the Braves, and the Phillies all get in.
How about that?
Of course, yeah, because they're just all so tremendously watchable. You know, Atlanta really has an awful lot of firepower and some pretty good pitching, and they're where they're supposed to be. They're doing what they're expected to do. 6.5 out, that could disappear in a hurry. But the Mets are very, very good, as we know, and it's amazing to think how many games are left, isn't it? I mean, we've had so much to talk about this season, and it's just kind of starting.
Well, you have to remember baseball is different. You know, we're involved with playoffs now, with the hockey playoffs and basketball and 7-game series, and you lose 2, uh-oh, you're in trouble. You know, baseball's not like that. And once all these other sports end, then you could get the feeling of understanding what a baseball season is all about. It's the cattle drive. It's Red River. It's John Wayne. You know, this is it. The stampede hasn't happened yet. The chuck wagon didn't go over the hill yet. And, you know, this is what the baseball season is all about. It's beautiful. Just beautiful. All right, let's switch gears just a little bit. Joe Maddon, how about that one? And yeah. Bruce, I mentioned this. I thought he was in trouble when this losing streak.
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
And certainly it got to 14, not all his fault. But he was let go before that, and I thought quite a move.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. You did, but Joe Maddon's got a lot of respect, and he's we all like he's a little, I wouldn't say eccentric, but he looks at things a little differently and isn't afraid to go against the grain and all these things. But again, like Joe Girardi, when it reaches the point where you can't win a game, it was 14 in a row. That has to tell you something has to happen. You know, you don't change your bullpen catcher. You know, it's got to be something a little closer to the top, especially when you got guys like Trout and Ohtani, and you know, who knows from Rob Thompson, right? I mean, is he the guy? No, I'm sorry, Phil Nevin. I mean, we know who. I can't even keep these things straight.
Phil Nevin, of course.
Phil Nevin was here. Now all of a sudden, the fiery Phil Nevin has these guys playing better baseball. They've just barely started under him. But and then you hear about, well, what does this do to Joe Maddon's Hall of Fame resume? Why do we not even talk about that until it's all over? Okay, I mean, yeah. It's just that's something we don't need to throw in here. He'll manage again, and I don't see Phil Nevin being the ultimate answer here. I just don't. They've got some problems on that team that surfaced in the losing streak. They lack something that I don't think this move is going to significantly change.
Boy, interesting. Bruce Jenkins with us. I love talking ball with you on the Saturday and Sunday. We just could go around the league. Strasburg came back this week, and he got lit up pretty good by the Marlins, but he is back on the mound for the first time.
Yeah, and his stuff didn't look too bad. He hung a bad one early on, but the slider and the changeup will look really good. Just, you're looking at highlights, but if you see a couple good changeups on the highlights, you know that he's still got the pitch, he's still got the slider. And he was pretty calm and still, pretty stoked after the game, just that he'd been out there. And, it's not like he's under a big spotlight like he is pitching for the Phillies or the Cardinals or, Washington is they're not going to do it this year. They just don't have it. But it's big for them. I mean, they're thinking about, do we trade Soto and what about Strasburg? And it's all about sort of, yesterday, and we had Trey Turner and we lost him and Bryce Harper and all these things. And they're just a mess right now. But I think Strasburg could give them a little bit of lift, for himself.
I guess he'll always be known for not pitching down in the pennant race.
Yeah,
the playoff. That's his one legacy, unfortunately, for him.
Yeah, and it's too bad because it was out of his hands.
That's right. They shut him down.
Yeah, Rizzo shut him down. I thought it was ridiculous. I'll always think it was. It's like what might happen. Here you are on the verge of something great, but everything we've learned here says this is not a good idea to keep pitching him. We're just going to shut it. It's just inconceivable that they did that. And you're right. For a long time, he was remembered with some of the most amazing stuff anyone had ever seen. He was funny, though. He goes, I was out a while, and then I come back, and everybody's throwing 97 and 98.
It's true. That's right.
And he's not.
That's right. It's funny. That's a great point. Yeah, he was the only one throwing like that. Now everybody does. Steven Strasburg is back, at least with Washington. The other one we've talked about, Bruce, it's fun to follow his career a little bit, is this Hunter Green.
Yeah.
He figured it out in his last start, and today he's gone five innings of a couple of hits against the Cardinals, 100 pitches, he's out of the game. But this stuff, this is electric stuff for this kid, so we followed him a little bit this year.
Yeah, it's a good day for interesting matchups. You got Bumgarner's going against Zach Wheeler today, but the best matchup is Hunter Green and Adam Wainwright. That's a great one. Put me down for Green if he can ever keep the pitch count down, being that throwing a no-hitter this year.
Okay.
This guy throws 100, and he's developed a wipeout slider. And there are times when he just can't be hit. And, you know, it's a little bit of struggle. He's still young, figuring it out. But that's I've seen a very high ceiling for that kid.
Yep, two hits in five innings. He's out of there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. The thing about no-hitters today is that you don't actually pitch one. But, you, by God, you could have. And you had one when they took you out.
So that, you know. Really? Five innings, two hits, 105 pitches. So he would have to throw 200 to throw a no-hitter. But, yeah, I like following him. He's starting to put it together. So it's fun. Let's talk Giants a little bit more here. How about this Jock Peterson? Bruce, now this is a guy, you know, in his career, very rarely hits against lefties. Very rarely when he does hit against a lefty, he even gets a hit. And he comes up, you can't make it up, against the Dodgers. They intentionally walk Flores to get to him with a lefty, and he busts the game open.
Yeah, it was kind of a grim flashback for him back to the days when Dave Roberts wouldn't play him against lefties. And there's some logic behind that. I mean, if you look at the numbers, although I think Jock would say, if you played me all the time against lefties, I guarantee you those numbers would go up. But in any case, it's Dave Roberts saying he can't hit the lefty, and here we go, and it's, you know, now they're playing the Dodgers, and he gets the big hit. I loved it. Jock Peterson's great. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to hit 330. He's not going to hit 50 homers, but he does great things, and he's certainly not flustered by anything. And he's done a lot of winning. That was a big hit, and I love when he stole second base. They didn't get a throw, but he just said, "You know, I'm just going to take this," and he did.
Yep, and it's beautiful. And plus, I love the way he handled the fantasy football thing.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know, he showed the tweets and the texts and all this stuff, and I thought it was great. He's really impressed me. He really has, and he's a reason to come out to the park to see him play. He's fun. He really is fun. Well, Joey Bart, of course, got sent to Sacramento this week, and Austin Wins is now here. And he comes in. You know, these guys have a rabbit's foot in their back pocket, you know, Farhan and Kapler. Wins comes in and gets two hits in his first game and actually looks pretty good behind the plate. And Bart's heading to Sacramento, so here we go. And Wins is the DH today, believe it or not.
Jeez.
A mediocre minor league hitter. It's about 2:30. He's the DH today against Kershaw. How about that?
If he gets a couple hits against Kershaw or just at least looks comfortable up there, the fans will have just a little more evidence that the guy can hit. And Bart was really not hitting. You know a great swing when you see it, and you know kind of a weird one when you see it, too. It's hard to explain, but Bart's swing, it's just there's something up there. He's got to fix it. It's not fluid. Sometimes it's too tentative. He's late when he shouldn't be, and he was just lost. And he can definitely get it back. He's been a hitter. He's done a lot of damage. We've seen him do crush the balls with the Giants, not so much this year, but I think it's a good move. I still can't remember the name of the switch hitting catcher who was in and out of here in about 5 minutes, like Fairchild and all these other guys. But
Fairchild got claimed today.
He's gone. Yeah,
the Reds claimed him, and Padlo is back with the Mariners.
Yeah,
that all happened today, and Junis is on the injured list. And how about this, Bruce? You know, honestly, and you got to respect Kapler and Farhan and Scott Harris and the way they do things in their analytical department. They've got Elliot Ramos back up here today hitting
third
against, because he's a right-handed hitter against Kershaw, and they're just loading it up with right-handers today.
I tell you what, if he strikes out three times against Kershaw, I hope he doesn't go back down. I'd like to see him for a while if they can afford it, because they know how to manage this roster better than anyone on the outside. But he needs to. The big league life is so rich. Everything about it is so great and luxurious, and the pride that you feel being in that you finally made the show. And you know, when you go back to a minor league franchise, even if it's something well run like Sacramento, it's like, God damn, you know, I was there and I couldn't stay there. I would like to see him stick around for a little while. But yeah, on the larger point there, Farhan is amazing. He's made so many moves that have paid off with people you really haven't heard of, like, ever.
Ever.
All of a sudden, here they are.
They're like made-up players. They're like made-up people.
Some of them are here for, like, 24 hours, you know? But some of them really, really connect, and That's his thing. It's uncovering. It's uncovering these guys. It's not so much that they don't cost anything. It's like these guys have something to offer that we're seeing, and maybe that his other team didn't, or they didn't have room for him. But we have room for this guy and what he's done. And you know that's when not just scouting, but you know analytics does come in a massive way, because you don't. It's one thing to judge somebody that you've been watching for 5 years and you figure your eye test is good enough. But with these guys, you got to go with what the numbers tell you. And Farhan's amazing at that.
As Ron Washington, they always said about Ron Washington when he coached third, you know, he took so many chances. They always said he had a rabbit's foot in his pocket. You know, that's they used to say that. And I feel for Farhan and these guys. They make these moves and they work. And the team won. Got 107 games last year. They're in the thick of the playoff race right now and still within shouting distance. They didn't go to 7.5. They're back to 5.5
now. That's right. And they're back to 7.5. They avoided that.
Yeah, you don't want that 7.5, and they've avoided it all week. Hey, Bruce, tonight, and Susan Slusser spoke beautifully about Pride Night tonight at the ballpark. The Giants do this, they do it correctly.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. They uphold the Bay Area's reputation for people who get it. They're on the right side of the most crucial issues. They stand up to be counted when they need to, and you know what they actually show the fans is perfectly well done. The right people are speaking. It's just what they do, and it kind of defines them in a way. I mean, overall, they're defined by how the team does, and they define themselves pretty well that way too. But I mean, just the way, whatever it might be, where it's an issue like this, or you know, just saying farewell to somebody like Bochy, or when they bring out the Willie Mack Award, there's so many ways that they manifest the way that they care, and just realize you know what, not just paying lip service to what this is, but really showing people that they're into it.
Yeah, they do it beautifully. And as Susan mentioned, Glenn Burke. Did you know Glenn Burke at all, Bruce?
I did.
Yeah, and that's a tragic story. You know, he was an openly gay baseball player and, of course, got pushed around and really didn't get a chance. But he did invent the high five with Dusty Baker, as Susan said. But the Glenn Burke story is one that we have to remember today.
Yeah, I met Glenn Burke when he was still at Berkeley High School. He came over to work out with the Cal basketball players at Harmon Gym. This is like Jackie Rigel, Charlie Johnson, you know, Ainsley Tritt, really big guys who are going to do something. And Glenn Burke, he was like 5'9". He completely belonged to that company. I go, man, who is that? And then, you know, when he got to the bigs, I remember Dusty Baker telling me about him because he really liked the kid. And, you know, Glenn was with the Dodgers, you know, for a good spell when the Dodgers are really good. His numbers don't look great, but, you know, people liked him. I think most people realized, you know, what was going on with him, and they sympathized with him. And it kind of overwhelmed Glenn in the end. Once he was out of baseball, it became very hard for him to cope. And nobody really knows, you know, what somebody goes through under those circumstances. And we lost him. Yep. But he left a pretty powerful memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, glad we could remember him today, Glenn Burke. I got a text question for you. Why is Dave Parker not in the Hall of Fame?
That's a good question. Because if you remember him, you know, the Titanic homers, the batting average to go along with that, the throwing arm, the presence on the team, kind of succeeding and playing along with, but succeeding. You know, Stargell. He was one of those guys. Even when he got with the A's and with those great teams, he was a huge part of that. I'm all for Dave Parker because I always look back on how did he strike you at the time. Rafael Palmeiro never struck me in a mind blowing way ever, and I watched him a lot, including playoff games. Never once did I think that's a Hall of Famer, no matter what he's doing. But Dave Parker was the flip side. He was a man. He was a difference maker. He was feared. And all those things that go into, you know, making a difference.
Yeah, he just looked different on the field. I always said different on the field. He was the thoroughbred. Well, a quick historical note. Today, June 11th, we're coming close to Matt Cain's perfect game in a couple of days. But 1990, Nolan Ryan, and I look at this and I'm just amazed. His sixth no-hitter, Bruce. I remember against the A's, 5-0, and he strikes out 14 for good measure.
Yeah, he's 43 years old. He's the oldest guy in the game, okay? He's 43. He's already thrown 5 no-hitters. And by the way, Nolan Ryan threw 12 one-hitters. So now he gets the sixth one against the A's. I mean, there was a little bit of caveat because Canseco and McGuire and Lansford were all injured that night, and they didn't play. But it's still, you know, the A's are coming off the world title. You still had Ricky Henderson and Dave Henderson, and Willie Randolph was on the team. But here's this 43-year-old guy just mowing him down. I was reading an old piece. I think Ron Krawczyk did it. He talked to a kid named John Russell, who was the catcher that night. It's the first time he'd ever caught Nolan Ryan, and this is what he gets. And Russell said something like, "By the end, I was just numb. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I've never seen a look in a guy's eyes." Like I saw tonight. I felt like I was in a coma. But somehow he managed to catch that no-hitter. I mean, this is the greatest arm ever bestowed upon a human being. And to throw, you know, he threw 130 pitches that night. That was nothing for him. He'd go 180 because he didn't have great control. I'd love to see how many times he went over 150.
Yeah.
And, of course, his arm got so tired, he only threw 222 complete games.
Right. Six no-hitters.
And by the way, speaking of that, who's leading the bigs right now? A bunch of guys with one. One leads the majors. He threw 222.
And one was a rainout too, a seven-inning game. All right. Well, look, we got Kershaw today and Long, the battle of lefties. Ramos is up. Wins is the DH. Who knows what's going to happen today, but I'll guarantee it'll be a story. So have a great afternoon.
Great stuff. Thank you, Marty. Looking forward to it.
All right. Talk to you tomorrow. That is Bruce Jenkins.